a choice of 22 people to buy.
Wow, this is really bad.
What?
Really bad.
Wow. The world was created for one. Well, as long as one person shows up, okay. I can still give the clients.
We're hanging
in. Truthfully, I can just... Nobody showed up. I just say in the tape recorder.
There are those there, too. Definitely.
Okay. Good evening, gentlemen. We're continuing in the Rambam Hilcha Shabbos Perek Ches Halacha Beis, Chapter 8, Halacha Number 2, in the Maznaim text. That puts us on page 134 and 135. So we did chayresh, we did plowing, and now we're moving on to the next of the 39 malachas of Zerea, which is planting. Hazorea kol shehu chayev. If you plant any amount, you are chayev. Just like plowing, any amount you're chayev, the same thing for planting. And what else is similar to this? Hazoimer, someone who prunes. You're cutting off some of the branches that are damaging the healthy part of the tree. Kadesh Yitzmach, so that should grow better the tree. Hareza Mayain Zarea. That's Mayain Zarea. Remember, that's similar of Malacha. Because you're dealing exactly with the tree. And the whole idea of planting is you're making it for the seed, something to grow in the ground. So the fact that I'm taking and cutting off something off of it, that makes the thing grow better. So that's also the same issue. Aval hamashke, but, what he means by the but, is that it's not going to be mein zareya, it's not going to be akin to zareya, that it's an av, but it's going to be a toilada. If you water smachim, grasses, or growing things, v'ilonas, the trees, b'shabas and shabas, hareze toledes zareya, that's a toilada. Of a derivative of Zareya, of a chayiv b'chol shu, and you're chayiv again for any amount. The reason why it's a derivative, although it's going to accomplish the same goal, it's totally different. We're not even dealing with putting anything in the ground, we're not even touching the tree at all. We're just putting water in the ground, and that's giving more liquid so the tree can grow. But the goal is still the same, and therefore it's a toilot of that. V'chein ha-shoyre chitim u-se'orin ki-yoytzen b'mayim. If you soak wheat seeds or barley seeds or similar to that in water, again, that causes it to grow. Hareza toleda zareya v'chai v'chol shuts a toleda of zareya, and you're chai for any amount of that. Okay, so already got plenty of halacha to do on this. Lots of very practical things over here. First of all, there's a machlokes in the poskim, at what point do you transgress the malacha of planting? Some authorities say that as soon as you place the seed in the ground and it's in a place where it can germinate, you're chayiv immediately upon putting it in because you've done the action of planting it. And let's say, for example, the wind blows the seed out of the ground, right? You still have transgressed because you did the malach of putting the seed in the ground and you did what was necessary to make that activity happen, and that you're chayiv. Other authorities say that you don't transgress the malach until it actually germinates. So even though it takes 3 days later for it to germinate, so, and it's no longer Shabbos when it germinates, but the transgression takes effect retroactively to the time that you placed the seed on the ground in Shabbos.
But only God would know that. You wouldn't know that.
If it what?
If it germinates. Or if the seed flew away. You wouldn't know
so
that.
So you're right. Well, you would know because you check it out in a few days. You'll see what's going on, right? And you'll see something very interesting now. So you're right. If the seed would get blown out or removed before it germinates, you would not have transgressed the malacha because it never happened that way. So this is a machlokas in the poskim, and this is regarding a biblical prohibition now. It's not a rabbinic, so we have to take the stringent side. Therefore, we have to assume that by putting the seed in the ground on Shabbos, where it can germinate, you already transgress, no matter what happens afterwards. But since there are poskim rule that you don't transgress until it germinates, so therefore, what should you do? At least do the best you can. If you put the seed in before Shabbos, you should make sure that after Shabbos, to remove the seed after Shabbos. So at least according to the other authorities, you would not transgress. In other words, for you to bring the korban chatas, we'd probably make you bring the korban chatas. But at least, according to the other opinions, at least get it out after Shabbos. At least, according to the other opinions, you won't transgress for doing that. So that's what comes out with that. Now, there are three types of things you can do that can transgress this balach of Zareah. One is doing something to initiate growth, and that's what we say, putting the seed in the ground. There are other things like promoting growth, where it's already growing, but you're helping it grow more. And the third is protecting growth, that no damage happens to it. By protecting it from damage, it will continue to grow. This is all part of Zareah. So in terms of initiating growth, for example, if you'd be eating outdoors and eating fruits and vegetables, if you'd be careful, let's say have a watermelon, right, not to spit the seeds on the ground. Because then, very much so, the seeds can germinate, which would be a violation of the Torah principle. You're having a sunflower seeds, a chvase, whatever. You put these things, it could definitely be a problem. So that's regarding the initiating growth. Now, promoting growth, or the obvious one, is watering. That's clear. Watering a plant is for sure not allowed on Shabbos. So therefore, similarly, if you're eating outdoors, you would not be allowed to wash your hands over the grass, even though your intention is not to promote the growth of the grass. But since the water falling on the grass inevitably will promote its growth, so what is that? That's considered a psik resha, right? It's an inevitable consequence that has to happen, which is not allowed. So you could not wash your hands outdoors for that, and we'll see. And truthfully, any other type of liquid that would help with plant growth, orange juice would probably do a good job, probably lemonade, you know, most of these things would promote plant growth, and therefore, you know, drinks like juice and soda, you couldn't be pouring any of that, and for that matter, you shouldn't be drinking because it'll probably spill there. Interesting, how do you like this? If you have no other aids, say you urinated on the ground, that would be okay because that does not promote growth. So that's an interesting, you know, someone say, what do you have for your kid? Like your mom, she's walking down, going to shul, and you're going up Bathurst, and you have the long path, right? You know, from center until Westmount. With the kids, that's a good 15-minute walk. If you're smack in the middle and that kid's got to go, man, you know, it ain't, you know, there's not even any cutoffs. No. You can't get into anywhere. You're finished. So, listen, they do it with their dogs, right, all the time. So, I'm saying, so you really could do that. I mean, it's not a problem because you're not initiating plant growth. So, interesting, you never know when it'll come up, young man. Okay, for your kids. for your kids. Right? Now, but that's important. Now we have to get to the issue of putting flowers in water. We mentioned it briefly a couple weeks ago. So flowers or grass that's cut from their roots are obviously not living and they're not growing plants. And on a biblical level, there'd be nothing wrong with putting flowers in water on Shabbos. However, the rabbis prohibited it for obvious reasons. And there's two main reasons why they prohibited putting flowers into a vase on Shabbos. Number one, if the flowers have not bloomed yet, and they're not completely open, so putting them in water will cause them to open. Now, really, even causing them to bloom is not, strictly speaking, planting. But the rabbis prohibit it because it resembles planting, because it looks like it's growing, right? When a person looks and sees that it's not blooming, you put the water in, and now it blooms, right? It looks like you're continuing the growth, you're aiding and promoting growth. So it looks akin to that, so they didn't allow it. That's one problem. Second problem is filling a vase with water on Shabbos is what is involved an undue amount of tircha exertion, which is not allowed on Shabbos. The rabbis do not allow us to exert ourselves. Don't work up a sweat on Shabbos because it takes away from the aura of Shabbos. See, though technically you could lift a very heavy refrigerator, not really a refrigerator, it's like a couch, on Shabbos, biblically. But rabbinically, you really shouldn't, you know, because of the exertion that's there, unless there's not much tzarech, but I'm just, so that's not allowed. So therefore, filling the water up, the vase with water, is also a tircha that's not allowed. So therefore, would come out the following. It definitely is forbidden to fill a vase with water on Shabbos, even if you're going to put plants that are already bloomed and open because of the aspect of the tircha. And the opposite, you can't add water to a vase. That's filling it all up. Okay, filling it up, that's the tircha. How about just adding some water to the vase? You can't add that as well. However, on yontif, you are allowed. So let's say you have a lulav, hadasim, aravis, or in a pail of water. So an additional water can be added on yontif. Only on yontif are we lenient, but not on Shabbos. Shabbos, either way, filling or adding. And there again, it's for the lulav and the esrog and hadasim, so that's important.
What's
stuff.
The issue? What you have adding the water?
Again, it would be considered still tircha. Still tircha. But on yontif, there would be a need. There's a need, because you have to... The problem is it doesn't fit into the aura of Shabbos. But if I want to keep the lulav fresh, I'm doing it. It's for yontif. You know, for Shabbos, just to keep the flowers. There's no Shabbos in
yontif. If you already have a vase filled with water, like we've done this before.
So we're going to get, let's see if we get to it. If not, you can ask. So now, what about flowers that have not completely opened? So even as I say the vase is filled with water before Shabbos, you can't put them in because then that could make them bloom. Okay, so that's the other issue. Now, what would be, by process of elimination, what would you think would be okay then?
Completely blue.
By process of elimination, if I had a vase that was filled with water, and I had flowers that were completely bloomed, right. You'd think by process of elimination, you should be able to put them in. But guess what? There's a machlokas poskim in that as well. Some say it's permitted because neither of the two above mentioned issues apply. However, some poskim say that even in that situation, one shouldn't place them in there for the first time because people will make the obvious mistake. You know, bloomed and filled. You know, some will
he did it.
Will fix. You know, we'll just put water in. You know, so it could be made a mistake. Therefore, it's preferable to really place even open flowers in a water-filled vase prior to Shabbos. But let's say you forgot to put the open flowers into the vase prior to Shabbos, then you can rely on the poskim who say that it's okay and put it in. All right. So if you had a vase already filled with up and people came to your house and gave you full bloomed flowers, you don't want to embarrass them. Then you can put it in. So I guess if you're gonna have secular guests over, just have a vase of water ready.
We've done that. Yeah.
You know, but it's only going to be good, right? If they're
you have to look at the flowers.
No, I didn't know it was a blooming.
That part you didn't know. But I guess, you know.
Usually it's only roses really that aren't open. Everything else is usually open.
Pretty much.
That someone's going to bring to your house.
Right. What if you had open flowers in a vase and they went out and you want to put them back in? Everybody says you can put them back in. Okay. And really, lechatchila, you don't put lulav, hadas, and ravas in water on yontif. You only have to be in water before yontif, then you put them back in water.
There are some
who do. I've seen some people do that. It is good for it. Okay, did that address your question? Oh, okay, good. Now, that was the second issue. The third issue is protecting growth. Protecting growth is also a problem. So therefore, let's say you want to protect the cover of plants to protect them from sun damage or cold damage. Let's say here it's going to be a frost. So I think they put a thing over it, a glass container, something over each flower, whatever. To protect. I don't know. I don't know anything about flowers. You want to cover it up. So you couldn't do that unless you cover them up before the sun rises, before they're going to be damaged. But the most obvious one is you can't spray insecticide. And growing plants, because even though insecticide doesn't help it grow, but it will take away any potential damage. So therefore, insecticide would not be allowed. Now, in terms of other practical applications, the most obvious one is a sukkah that is rained, and you have a cover on top of the sukkah, and you want to roll off the sukkah, the cover, and the rolling off will cause the rain to go onto the grass. Now, if you have a sukkah, so number one, you really shouldn't have a sukkah near the grass. That's the first. You're positioning a sukkah, always keep it away from the grass for these reasons. But let's say you've got it on top, and water, and you roll it out, the water's going to go. And even if you don't care for it to go go on the grass. Again, that's a case of a psik reisha, and therefore really under a simple circumstance would not be allowed. So what are the ways you're allowed to do it? So number one, you can ask a non-Jew to do it. Why? Because you're allowed, remember he said you could tell a non-Jew to do a permissible action even though inevitably something prohibited will come out. Remember, you could tell him to wash the dishes. You know, you could tell him, let's say, to take something out of the car on Shabbos, even though it'll make the light go on. But that's not really what you want. So the same thing, you could ask a non-Jew. Number two, you could put a plastic cover on the ground in order that the water falls on it. And then even if the water subsequently goes from the plastic cover down onto the grass, why are you okay? Because of what word? The G word? Grama. Because it's only a cause, it's not direct. So that would work. Or as well, if a sukkah is standing on a porch or on a pavement, you could roll off the cover, because even the water goes onto the porch or the pavement, and then it goes onto the grass, it's the same idea of grama. And similarly, you couldn't have water, you know, collected on a chair and a table, just, you know, brush it off and would go on the grass. You couldn't do that either. Now, here's interesting regarding water sprinklers. Can you have an automatic water sprinkler water the grass on Shabbos? So the ones that are these, the underground
timer,
ones?
On timers.
On timers.
Yeah. Didn't we do this a few weeks ago, about a month ago?
We may have done it, but it's coming up again. So what did we say last time?
Do it in the middle of the night so people don't see if you're living in a
neighborhood. Right. So really you're allowed to do it, but now I'm learning over here, so this safer brings a lot from Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe says not to do it because he holds it Zilzul Shabbos. But I'm saying if it's 2 o'clock in the morning, probably isn't Zilzul Shabbos. I would say the best thing really, you know, if it's timed on a 7-day-a-week timer, just have it that doesn't go on Shabbos. If you don't water grass once a week, I don't think it's going to make a difference. That would avoid all Shabbos. But I don't know if they have 7-day timers for this. It could be just a 1-day timer and then going to forget this and that. So if go off 2 o'clock in the morning, no one's going to know, and it won't be any Zilzul Shabbos.
I thought we couldn't ask non-Jews to do Deraisa. Thing. So wouldn't letting
first
the water
of all, it's not Deraisa.
It's not Deraisa then.
It's not Deraisa. It's
it's a derivative, but that's the rest, isn't it?
Okay, it's a derivative. No, this is only a... but again, you're not asking him to do a doraisa. You're asking him just to... Remember, even if you want one thing from the goy and something else happens, but that's not really what you want, that's not what you're even intending on him doing, then that's okay. Right? Let's say you forgot something in the car for Shabbos to eat, so you want to get it from the car. So the act of just getting it from the car, there's nothing wrong with that, right? It's going to turn the light on in the car, but that's not what you want. That's not the main thing that you want over there. You're not telling him to turn the light on the car.
You can't do.
Right. You can't tell him to go water the grass. But I can tell you to take the thing off the sukkah. So that's what he's doing. Now, if something else comes out of that already, that's not a concern for us. Okay, so that ends this issue. Okay, yeah?
One thing that I'm a little confused about. If you were living, let's say, in the Negev, the idea that you can feed your animal on Shabbos, why wouldn't it be the same thing if you're in scorching hot weather and those plants have to be watered every day? Why couldn't you, for protecting the plants, not water it on Shabbos?
That would be
the same sort of principle applies here. Like with the
animal. No, because on Shabbos, you're obliged to feed your animals every day of the week. You have to feed your animal before you feed yourself. There's no issur in feeding an animal on Shabbos. It's not usher to feed an animal on Shabbos.
No, so I'm saying the same thing for the plant.
No, but there's no, because there's an issur to water the plant on Shabbos. It's not like it's prohibited to feed an animal, but on Shabbos. But because the animal's suffering, we let him do it. It's totally permitted to feed an animal on Shabbos. It's nothing else. What's wrong giving an animal food? It's no malach giving an animal food.
Talking about sort of milking the cows or whatever too.
That's already sar balei chayim. There's already another mitzvah involved in giving pain for them, and therefore, and even that is not so posh. You have to have timers and this and that, all these. But that's already tsar of an animal. Sar balei chayim is doraisa according to many opinions. So that is but here watering the grass, there's no tsar to the grass. Grass doesn't scream out, right? So taka, what you have to do is you got to water it right before Shabbos, and then you water it right after Shabbos. And that is really showing your emunah in Hashem. Because you're right, for that's the whole point of Shabbos. Although it really needs it, you're going to have emunah in Hashem that even though you don't water the grass on Shabbos, which you can't have for the animal, because the animal will be in real pain. It's not a question of emunah. You can't cause pain to an animal. Right? The plants will not be in pain. Even
why do we need an angel guarding all the blades of grass then?
No, that's just mystically that there are angels guarding them, but there's no pain to the grass. There's no pain to the grass. So that's just a good old-fashioned malacha on Shabbos, which we can't do. So again, if you'd have automatic sprinklers, that might be a way around it. But to actually water it, that we could not do. Okay, moving on now to halacha gimel. Okay, so gimel now. So the kotzer, which is, what do we call that? Kotzer is uprooting.
Reaps.
Reaping, uprooting, whatever. That's going to be involved in halachas gimel, Dalid, and half of hay. Okay, that's the next three halachas here. So let's tackle this. Hakoitzer, now when you are harvesting, harvesting. So now, what's the shear for that? Here already we're not dealing with a kol shehu anymore. The shear for that is kigro geris. You're harvesting the amount, you're reaping the amount equal to that of a dried fig. So why do we have to have, why wasn't a kol shehu good enough here, while here beforehand? Well, now we have to have the amount of a dried fig, because last time it was just planting and preparing the earth, so any amount will enable any kind of planting. To plant the smallest seed, one little plant comes up. But reaping already has a new aspect, because reaping, it's important because it provides food for us to eat. You're only reaping because you plan on eating. So an amount smaller than a dried fig isn't considered a significant enough of a measurement of food, and therefore you're not chayv. It wouldn't be considered malechas machsheves, a well-thought-out malach of significance, because there's not even anything to eat from that. So now we've already come up to the shear of krogeres, a dried-out fig. So if you do that, the halacha is you are chayv. Now, krogeres is one-third of an egg, as we will see later on in halacha. Hey, so that main idea is the malach, as Yerushalmi describes it, is you're separating the plant from its life-giving force from the earth or the tree or whatever. As long as it's connected to the ground, minerals and energy is coming into it, it's growing. Once you pluck it out, you've transgressed it by doing that. We will see later on the Rambam, what if the thing is connected but not nurturing from the land anymore? We will see, you know, what the halachas will be then. The thing's so dried out, it's fully ripe. We'll see. It's interesting what the Rambam is going to say there. Anyway, so kotzer, which is the classic, you know, you're using a sickle, whatever, and you're reaping it. Okay, but then you have other things like tolesh. Now, tolesh, again, in the English, probably isn't going to say a different word. The difference between kotzer and tolesh is kotzer is with a utensil, and tolesh is with your hand.
Plucking.
Right, so they call it plucking. So one is reaping and one is called plucking. So it doesn't matter. You're accomplishing the same goal, but the point is to be the av malach, it has to be done with a utensil. If it doesn't have a utensil anymore, it's not as efficient or whatever. It takes longer. And now it becomes a tolesh because it still accomplishes the same goal. And that's what he summarizes and says, if you uproot something from where it's growing from, you've transgressed that malach of kotzer. Therefore, you see some other examples. How about tsror sha'olubo asavim? Let's say a rock, that let's say moss or, you know, type of grass is growing on the rock. Or v'kishus sha'olubisne, or certain types of parasite plants that grow on shrubs, or vasavim shetzomchu al gavachavis, types of grasses that grow on barrels, right? Maybe that's fungus, I don't know. No, I don't know if it's fungus is grass, I don't know, maybe not, whatever. But then it's types of grass, moss, whatever, that grows on the barrels. Hatoilish v'hem, if you take them off, shezehu mekom gidchayiv, your chayiv, why shezehu mekom gidulav, this is the place where it's growing from. But listen to this one now. What about a flower pot? Flower pots are very interesting things in halachas. We make a big distinction between a flower pot that has a hole and a flower pot that doesn't have a hole. Flower pot that has a hole and it's on top of the earth, we consider it still yonek, it's still nurturing from the ground. A flower pot without a hole, it's considered doesn't nurture from the ground. So what if you pluck something off of a plant from a flower pot that is not with a hole in it? Potter, your potter, why? Because this is not really its essential place of growth. Because those plants usually are supposed to grow on the ground. By planting them in the flower pot, you're already separating them from their normal place of growth. They're no longer connected to its source already, and therefore there's no biblical violation, but of course the rabbis won't let you do it anyway, because it looks so much like it. But you know, once you've already separated from the ground. Really, plants supposed to grow in the ground. So once you've taken something and you put it into a pot that's not considered its normal growing place, so biblically you don't transgress, but rabbinically you can't do it anyway. But a flower pot that does have a hole, bichdei sharish cut in the size of a little root, and it's put on top of the earth. It's like the earth. And you pluck it off your chayv because that's already considered nurturing from it, because that's the halacha. I'm not a botanist, but Chazal say if it's got a hole in it, it is able to work. But it only applies in a home with an earthen floor. Wouldn't apply, again, biblically, but rabbinically, you can't do any of these things. So it's not going to make a difference. Lacha lemaisa is not going to make a difference. All right, let's do one more. Dalid, kol zera shiktsiroso. Interesting now. Now we're going to talk about two birds with one stone. Kol zera shiktsiroso mitzamachas aso umagadalto. Any type of seedling that when you will reap it, it will on the one hand separate from the ground, but will also cause it to continue to grow, will also enhance its growth. Under certain plants, as you cut it, it helps the rest of the part grow. It only grows a certain amount. So if you cut it off, you'll transgress one avera of reaping, but then it makes the remaining part grow. It helps it grow. So then that will be a second malacha of Zerea. Kigon, for example, aspasto. Aspasta is a type of grass for cattle. I guess that grass has to grow very fast. You know, you need to keep growing and growing and growing. So when you cut it, it just keeps growing afterwards. Or vasilka or beets. Hakaitzer bishkagav. Let's say by mistake he reaped these items. Then chayev shtei chatos. He bring two korban chatoses. Even though it's one action, but two malachas came out. Achas mivnei shu kotzer. One because he's reaped. Vachas mivnei shu noteh. The other one because he's planting. Because he's accomplishing both things at one time. And similarly, v'chein ha-zomer, and someone who is pruning, but not just regular pruning, v'tzorech la'etzim. And you need the wood that you're pruning off. So now, it's chayv mishum kotzer mishum noteh. You're chayv because of reaping and because of planting. You're reaping, what are you reaping? You're reaping the wood that you want off of it, and you want that wood. And it also helps the plant grow, and that's a toilet of notea, right? But if you wouldn't need the wood, then you'd only be transgressing one, but this way you'd be transgressing two. Interesting. Gav shushis, that's a clod of earth, shalofor, shalobah asovim, and now grass is growing on a clod of earth. So then he bmlr, you pick up the clod of earth from the ground, v'nichal gabi yaseis, put it on top of, let's say, poles. So chayv mishum tolesh, you'd be transgressing because of tolesh. I guess the chiddush is, even though you haven't taken the grass off of the ground, you've taken the ground and the grass. I might have thought only if I take the grass and separate the grass from the ground, then I've separated it. But the fact that if I take the whole clod of earth, and I'm really separating earth from earth, maybe I wouldn't be chayv. So Rambam is saying, no, you're chayv as well, because once you do that, the grass is no longer nurturing from the ground. Having a little clod of earth is not going to be enough to make it nurture. What about the reverse? What if you had a clod of earth with grass on top of it that was already on some poles above? And now you put it down onto the earth. Then you'd be chayv planting. And again, even though you haven't put the grass into the ground, but now reattaching the ground to the ground, that now will enable it to grow, and that would be zareah.
So you can lay sod.
Exactly. That's the practical example. laying sod would mamish be osur for many reasons. First of all, it would be osur because of zareah. Number two, it definitely is a tircha. Right? It's definitely zilzul Shabbos, laying down the grass. So that would definitely be a lot of prohibitions. Right? And if you laid it down, what should you do? But you have it after Shabbos, take it off. According to the opinions, it said it hasn't germinated yet. Right? You take it off. Maybe to not be chayv. Okay, last issue here. Here's the case I mentioned. Te'enim sheyashvu, figs that have dried up a lot, bivehem, on their trees. Like really a lot. Okay? So what's interesting, the Gemara and Chulin, there's two aspects that are going to be combined over here. When are fruits able to be makabel tuma? When can fruits become tame? Not when they're growing on the ground. A fruit that's growing on the ground, as it's connected to the ground, cannot be makabel tuma, because it's like the earth. Earth isn't makabel tuma. Now, a fruit that's been plucked off, once it's plucked off, it can be makabel tuma. It can receive tuma. Right? So now the question is, what if the fruit is so dried out, right? So now, you know, what is it considered regarding tumah at that point, even though it's technically attached to the ground, but it's already dried out? So the Gemara Chulin says that these figs that are dried out on the trees, right, they're still connected, so they do, if they can become tumah. They can become tumah. But what's interesting, Lumar, it's like a we're getting a double whammy. It can be makabel tuma. So what if you pluck it off? It says you're also chayiv for plucking it off on Shabbos, which is sort of like a contradiction, because if you're saying it be makabel tuma, it means it's not really part of the ground. If it's not part of the ground, then why chayiv for tolish? So there's a whole shmooze more hands there, but it's kind of, we give the stringencies of both in that situation. And that's what the Rambam says. These figs that dried out and they're on their trees, v'chein ilan sheyavshu peirosav bo, and a tree that its fruits have dried up, ha-toilish from the Shabbos, chayiv, you're chayiv. Even though, that's what he's saying, afal pi sheheim ka'akurin lin tuma, even though they're considered like uprooted regarding tuma. I guess the Gemara there is machmer on both ends, because it's still connected to a certain degree. So in terms of Shabbos, you're chayiv. In terms of tuma, you're not chayiv. Very interesting. Tosfos over there mentions that's only if it is it's dried out to a certain extent. But it seems that the level of the Gemara there, the Gemara calls up. So let me make it even clearer. It's interesting how the Gemara is saying a little different wording than the Rambam. The Gemara over there talks about, it calls it Ta'anim Chetsomku. Somku means it's totally ripe. Ready to what? It's dry. Like it's ripe, ready to come off. But so then it says it gives the stringencies. But Tosus brings out if it's mamish, dried out mamish, and it's not nurturing at all from the earth, then you're not chayv, you pluck it off. So it seems there's a level where it's, you know, to a certain point ready to come off. Maybe when something's fully ripened, it doesn't nurture anymore from the ground. Maybe, or it's minimally. But Tosfos agrees, if it's totally ripe, then this mamish, like it's not like it's attached, even though it's connected, it's not like it's attached, and Tosfos said under that circumstances, you'd be putter for taking it out. And, but as long as they're connected to some degree, there is some aspect of tumah. So even though here we're saying that it can be, it's mekabel tumah, and that's the interesting contradiction, though it's mekabel tumah, still you'll be chayiv for Shabbos on that. Okay, good place to stop. We'll finish that halacha, and then we'll do the halachas l'maisa that come out of it. Shkoyach. Yeah, let's hope we get this on the web. Well, Paul should be back by tomorrow.